from the halls of every school in Michigan. This is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
Have you ever wondered where children go on field trips when they're away from school? This week on School Talks, we're joined by Claire Lanois Hall from the Detroit Zoo, Amy Green from the Belle Isle Nature Center, Jeremy Fishman and Alex Martins from Tree Runner Parks, and from the Macomb Intermediate School District, Dr. Alicia Fly. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Claire Lanois Hall, who is the Director of Education for the Detroit Zoo. Welcome to the program, Claire.
Thank you for having me.
So the Detroit Zoo is one of my favorite places on earth, just given all that is inside the zoo. And it sounds kind of funny, but it's so much more than just the animals. The educational opportunities there are abundant. And I can't think of a better word. And we know that education has always put a value on hands-on learning well beyond any kind of textbook in a classroom and that. And tell us about how the Detroit Zoo helps engage learners and what you would see as the overall educational value of the zoo.
Gosh, where to start with that? The tremendous value, as you've mentioned. The visit to the zoo can really bring classroom learning to life. So textbooks and multimedia resources in the classroom obviously have a really critical part in building learners' expertise and building that foundation for their future value in society and involving themselves on global issues. And the opportunity to come to the zoo to see animals and that most of us will never actually see in the wild, but be able to see them up close, nose to nose, beak to nose, and have an opportunity to observe their natural behaviors and understand why they're in zoos, why they're under human care, is really an amazing experience that really can't be paralleled in a traditional four-wall classroom.
Yep, and you mentioned partnerships between schools and zoos, and I can tell you, as my time as superintendent in Warren Consolidated Schools, we put a high premium on having our children come to the zoo because of the experience it provides them. Walk our School Talks listeners through what a typical field trip to the zoo would look like for elementary, middle, and high school children.
I'm glad that you mentioned all those grade levels, because oftentimes zoos are seen as great opportunities for our younger learners, but they extend all the way up through high school. Many of our teachers call us. They choose something out of the list of learning labs, which is what we call our school group experiences, something that matches their curriculum or the interests of their students, and they bring their students out for that experience. And we do start all the way with pre-K, having opportunities for our youngest learners to get excited about science, to be aware of the world and the animals who live in it. Our elementary programs start to move into nurturing that curiosity, engaging interest in more specific topics, especially forming that science foundation. Research shows us that by the time kids get to middle school, they have pretty much decided whether or not a future career in a STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math, is for them or not. So the programming that we're doing for middle school students really shows them all the different opportunities that are out there for them and the foundation they need in place in order to be successful with those. High school, we're bringing it home. We've got a program called Zoo Careers, and it focuses on careers in veterinary medicine. The kids come out, they do a mock surgery on a plush otter to try to figure out what's ailing that specific animal. They get a tour of the vet hospital to actually see where we bring animals for care when they need that extra support, and our incredible veterinary team. So we are committed at all different learning levels of making sure that our community stays engaged with science, technology, engineering, and math, and finding opportunities to see themselves in those fields. We also have a really cool opportunity for schools who might not have the available resources to come out the zoo called Day at the Zoo. And that funding covers a bus to and from the school, admission, and an education program, primarily geared towards Title I schools. But we see somewhere between 10 and 15,000 students and teachers each year just through the funding of those programming, because we want to make sure that every young person in the community has an opportunity to come out and experience the zoo. And for many of these young people, as they're getting off the zoo in the morning, or getting off the bus in the morning at the zoo, This is their first time ever at the zoo, and what an incredible opportunity and experience to be able to offer that for them.
And, you know, you mentioned Title I. For School Talks listeners, Title I is a federally funded program that provides resources to children who come from socioeconomic challenging environments and so on. And when I think about the opportunity for a child in that particular situation to be able to come to the zoo, where otherwise they may never, ever. And I've had more conversations with students who, if they live in the area, they know about the water tower, but they really don't know what's in there until they get there. And it's just absolutely fascinating. So I want to follow up on your point about careers. Mm-hmm. You know, the state of Michigan has put a lot of energy and effort into helping students choose career paths. And when you consider high school is a, sort of a different time for a student to go to the zoo than someone in third grade who might be, you know, interested, even though they're not here anymore, dinosaurs or whatever the animal of the day is. It seems to me that coming to the zoo, when you get past just looking at the animals, there are any number of careers that a high school student could see in action. And like you mentioned, veterinary medicine or whatnot. And those kinds of partnerships, especially for high school kids, is such a neat thing. I want to follow up on, once children are at the zoo on a field trip, are there any particular hands-on opportunities that they would have there? Tell us a little bit about, because it's more than just looking at the animals,
yes,
right? So tell us about what kids are able to do there in small groups or things with their hands.
We've been redesigning a lot of the habitats and experiences for our guests to make sure they are appealing, up-to-date, hands-on, like you mentioned. We've started including 3D life-size models of some of the animals outside of the habitat, which not only is amazing for young learners who are very tactile learners, but also individuals with like low or no vision to be able to experience the zoo in an animal that they couldn't just reach in and touch, obviously, but to be able to see how large that animal is or the textures or their adaptations. So we have those 3D models outside of the river otter habitat. We have one outside the Japanese giant salamander tank, which is really cool because they tend to scurry underneath the cave-like structures that have been made, which is appropriate for them to have those spaces to go to in their habitat. But to be able to see how large they are and what they actually look like outside of that habitat space is really cool. Another example, Partula snails, which might not be an animal that would draw you to the zoo in the same way that a lion or giraffe would, but Partula snails were once extinct in the wild, and at one point we had all 36 individuals that existed in the world at the Detroit Zoo. It's incredible. And we brought them back from the brink of extinction, and we have this exhibit on them in the middle of the lobby of the Ford Education Center. And we've made a Partula snail who in actuality is about the size of your thumbnail. He's about 2 or 3 feet long, and he sits out proudly on his stand in the lobby so people can really see how what they look like, what the texture is to their shell, where their eyes and mouth are. It's just a really cool experience. And we continue thinking about ways to engage our visitors, both students and lifelong learners, to be able to see the animals in new and different ways and understand a little bit more about our connections with animals and what our role is and making sure that there's spaces for them in our mm-hmm. future world.
So I have to ask the question, for elementary students, in your opinion, what is the most popular exhibit at the zoo? I have my own answer, but I'm curious what you know from your records or attendance is the most popular for them. What do you think?
I'd have to say the Polk Penguin Conservation Center.
I was right.
We have data that shows about 95% of our guests experience that building. Close proximity to the front certainly helps. But what a dynamic experience. It's built and opened in 2016. You walk in and you're in South America. You're nose to beak with the penguins right in front of you, multiple species. You go down the ramp. You can see the penguins swimming or flying, if you will, through the water. You come back up, and again, you get an opportunity to see them before you head out. There's little nooks and crannies that we designed in there that are specifically for kids. Mm-hmm. So they have opportunity to kind of crawl in and see the whole habitat from a different perspective. But what an immersive experience. I mean, mm-hmm. to really feel like you could be in Antarctica or on one of the southern tips of the continents down in the southern hemisphere and experience the penguins in that way. It's mm-hmm. just a really cool space.
Without question, an excellent ambassador for the Detroit Zoo, Claire Lanois Hall. I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing with us just how wonderful the zoo is, especially from an educational perspective. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Amy Green, the director of the Belle Isle Nature Center. Welcome to the program, Amy.
Thank you.
Among the many, many things in Southeast Michigan, I continue to be amazed at the gems that are right in our backyard. And the Belle Isle Nature Center is definitely one of them. And I'm hoping you could tell us about the Nature Center, where it's located, and what one could expect when they visit.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. The Belle Isle Nature Center is, of course, on beautiful Belle Isle. We are at the far eastern end of the island. So opposite the main attractions that folks see when they go over the bridge, they see the aquarium, the conservatory. You kind of have to get lost to find us. Go through the woods appropriately, and we're right at the end of it. When folks visit, they can expect to see a really stunning and engaging facility. It's not like any other nature center that you've seen before by design. So those kind of classic images of perhaps a ski lodge or stuffed animals are not at all in existence at the Belle Isle Nature Center. We're really leaning into the fact that we are downtown in the heart of a city and amplifying this urban nature that's all around us all the time and people's places as part of that.
And what a wonderful gem right on the island there. So I understand the Nature Center had been renovated recently. And what kind of work was done, and what did the renovation afford you to do as far as new exhibits and whatnot?
Yeah, so like everybody, we closed for the pandemic. And after some time, we used that time to invest in renovating the place and updating it truly to reflect the programming that we were already doing in the local neighborhoods. So everything inside, other than the footprint itself, and Turtle Cove, which you'll see when you come visit, which is also updated a little bit. Everything else was updated. So all of our animals have beautiful new homes. All of the interactive features for people to explore and learn from are brand new and updated. And all of the murals, the activities, the entire place, our auditorium, a great learning space, the whole place is fresh and new. We're thrilled about it.
You know, one of the things I learned from the Nature Center, and it really made me stop and think, is how wildlife share the same space as we do, especially in an urban setting. And in my neighborhood, we're always surprised when there's a herd of deer on our front lawn, right? And what's intriguing to me is, are the deer thinking, well, we were here first, and you're surprised at us versus the other way around. And the whole notion that we're sharing this space, especially in an urban setting, I find absolutely intriguing. And I was curious, for the city of Detroit proper, what are a few forms of wildlife that share the same space with the people that aren't the typical things like birds and that? What would you classify a few of those?
Well, like everywhere, the deer are around, certainly. But the first thing, I know it's a bird, but it's kind of special. The first thing that does come to mind for me about specific and uniquely Detroit wildlife are pheasants. There's a documentary about the pheasants of Detroit. They are iconic in imagery throughout murals around the city. And it really is a stunning and unique moment to be driving just through a neighborhood downtown and out comes a pheasant. And that's a little bit telling to me again, what makes Detroit unique as a big city, there are these open spaces, right? And there's this kind of rewilding happening where in most big cities, there's not room for wildlife to begin to live and thrive, too.
So on that note, when you have a city like Detroit that has open spaces, large open spaces, is it fair to assume that some wildlife will naturally migrate there, given that it's open, as opposed to your example of a much densely, more densely populated city? Are they taking advantage of that naturally?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yep. And then finding their way, you know, into your neighborhood as well, you know, as they're looking for resources, too.
Yeah, I've noticed, and maybe it's just me, but over the last however many years, it seems like deer are more and more comfortable around humans. And that could just be me, but I remember when we were younger, they seemed a bit more skittish than they are now, where they'll be out eating our flowers in our front yard, and we go out and get in the car and leave, and they don't even, you know, react to us hardly.
Yeah, it does. That brings up a nice, kind of a nice question to ask people of just how comfortable they are in sharing their space and their flower beds with other living things, right? And how can we comfortably cohabitate in a way that works for us and the world around us.
Yeah, so as part of the Detroit Zoological Society, help our School Talks listeners understand what a sort of a traditional school field trip would look like for a group of K-12 students. What can they expect?
Oh, man. All right. Well, they can expect some excellent educators, of course, to welcome them in, to meet them on their bus, and to have an experience that hopefully supports what the teacher is working with them on in their classrooms, right? So whatever perhaps science content standards they're working toward learning, we hope to make it experiential, right? Something that they can remember and draw from. Hey, remember that time we tested water quality and did, you know, these took these measurements? They can take that experience back with them. They should expect to see familiar and local places. Inside the Nature Center itself, it was intentionally designed to reflect actual iconic places in the city or familiar city places to bring that home to the kids and their power and making a difference in their own spaces. It's intentionally not abstract, the work that we're doing.
Very nice. With us right now is Amy Green, the director of the Belle Isle Nature Center. So in keeping with that thought, does the Nature Center, we talked about deer and whether they're comfortable around, does the Nature Center in any way provide students or visitors the opportunity to question or reflect how humans affect their environment?
That is what we do. You just, extra credit for you. Yeah, that's what we're there for. There are some really interesting interactive pieces at the Nature Center that help people explore the choices that they make and the impact that has on the world around them. There are places for people to leave a note about where they notice nature in their own spaces, right? So as an introduction, if nothing else, you just leave noticing the world around you a little bit differently, then that's an impact. There are some really cool larger-than-life things like a replica city sewer tunnel to walk in to really understand like this immersion through the built and natural environment. As you're going through the tunnel, you're learning about how animals might use that space. You're learning about how you might become involved in adopting a drain in your neighborhood to help protect the waterways in your areas. There's, for our littlest learners, there's this massive underground, you know, right in the city sidewalks, right underneath, you know, under the city sidewalk cracks, you can take on the role of an ant and dig around and see things that were left behind by humans and nature there and much more. I could talk to you all day about it, but I'm sure you'd rather see it.
Well, it reminds me when I was a kid, if you ever moved a patio block.
Yes.
There's like an entire city underneath there of though I don't even know what kind of bugs they are, but they're all living there. So what an exciting place. Tell us a little bit about some of the big events or things coming up that people could expect there, especially as we head into the winter months.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yeah. So all of our events year round are designed to help, again, to help people leave with a little bit more than what they came with and noticing the world around them, thinking about making some meaningful connections with people, animals, the natural world, so they all can thrive, right? Our school field trips and our events are designed to connect people to that. So In the winter, we have our Winterfest or Shiver on the River in partnership with Friends of the Detroit River. In August, we've got Bee Fest. In the spring, we've got our Green Fest. So there are events annually to help, you know, throughout the year to help people just kind of leave with a little bit more celebration about their impact on the world around them and how they're sharing spaces.
What a wonderful place for children, adults, and the like to come and see all about nature in our world. Amy Green, the director of the Belle Isle Nature Center, I want to thank you very much for joining us on School Talks, and I look forward to having you back in the spring to hear about Mud Puppy Palooza and some of the other things.
So, I can't wait to share about it. Thank you. I would love to add to, especially for the teachers in the community who are looking for a place to bring their students. There are two main things that are really important to know. Number one, everything we do is free. Admission, field trips, programs, evening, whatever time of day. So for the whole community, everything we do is free, and that's really important to us. And for the teachers, plan early. So we want you all to come, but making space, you know, plan ahead.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you very much for joining
us.
Thank you. Amy Green from the Belle Isle Nature Center.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Jeremy Fishman and Alex Martins from the Tree Runner Parks program. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, Jeremy, with a very creative name like Tree Runner Parks, tell us a little bit about your program.
Sure, Robert. So we own and operate four aerial adventure parks, two here in the Metro Detroit area. So when you think of an aerial adventure park, you think like Ninja Warrior show meets Swiss Family Robinson up in the trees. And so we combine ropes courses, zip lines into one kind of course that spans every level of difficulty from the beginner who has never climbed anything in their life except the couch to, you know, the double black diamond course that's very challenging. And really the way that we grade it is very similar to a ski resort where you go from your yellows and your purples up to your, you know, double black diamonds. But if climbing isn't your strong suit, we also do, we have at both of our Metro Detroit locations, at least an 18-hole mini golf course that are built underneath the trees in the forest, which is great in the summertime. We get a lot of people commenting about how unique it is and how enjoyable it is to be cooler in the forest and still playing their mini golf. And if that's not enough for you, we also have gem mining, which is really a unique experience in the Metro Detroit area. I don't believe anyone else has that, and that's a lot of fun, especially for the kiddos. We do general admission climbing. We have groups. We have youth programming that's grown tremendously over the years. So we really run the gamut.
You mentioned two locations in Metro Detroit. Where are they? And tell us a little bit about their locations.
Sure. So we have one, our first park in West Bloomfield, Michigan, on the campus of the Jewish Community Center there at Maple and Drake. And that is been there since 2014. So we're actually at our 10-year anniversary. And that is one of the largest parks really in the country. It's tremendous in size. It has, I believe, 16 courses. It has a 6-course junior course. It has the 18-hole mini golf as well as the gem mining. And then we have another one, our newest park that opened in 2019 of the four. And that is over in Rochester on the campus of Oakland University at Adams and Walton Road, just across from the village of Rochester there. And that park also has 27 holes of mini golf, which is amazing. It has the gem mining, and it also has the aerial forest as well as a similar, like a younger audience we call the Little Zipper, which is a trio package that you get gem mining, mini golf, and a little bit of zip lining in there. What I love about both the parks is that there's a little bit of something for everybody. West Bloomfield has the harder courses, but it also has the zip line course. Rochester the same way. It has mostly zip line course. We call that the Golden Grizzly, appropriately. And West Bloomfield has, we just changed the name, Alex. What do we have it now?
It's the Big Zip at West Bloomfield.
The Big Zip. And those are tremendous. And those are definitely a fan favorite. The line for those at the end of the day is usually quite long.
Yeah. So you you mentioned gem mining. Help our School Talks listeners understand what that actually means for someone.
So gem mining is one of the newest things that we introduced, and it really took off, especially with the kids and the parents. And the best thing about it is that not only are you looking for rocks and you're finding really big gems and cool fossils and shark teeth and a little bit of everything, but we have a lot of information around that can allow you to find out where your rock came from and what kind of rock you have. And so it's a great learning experience for parents and the kids along. And like Jeremy said, if you're not so interested in being up really high into the trees, it's a great way to get out into the forest. We often have a lot of parents that come, will bring a picnic, and they'll have lunch and do some gem mining, walk around. And, just all around a fantastic thing to do as a family.
Very neat. So joining us right now on the program is Jeremy Fishman and Alex Martins from the Tree Runner Parks Program. Alex Martins, walk our listeners through what a typical classroom or school field trip would look like at one of your parks.
Yeah, certainly. So our groups range in size, so we can, you know, be up to 20 all the way up to 120 at some of our parks. But once the school bus arrives, our main goal is to talk to the coordinator, get those wristbands handed out as quick as possible, and we get them into the park as quick as possible. We know how it is with kids. The attention span can be pretty short, so we want to get them out into the trees having fun so that they can enjoy themselves. One of the best things we do is that we allow kids to learn on their own. They, you know, figure it out, our equipment and all the things they need to know on the practice lines and through the beginner courses, and which means you don't need to start really high up in the air. You can start nice and low.
And one thing I like about your program is, as you know well, out in the workforce, employers regularly talk about how valuable it is to have an employee who can work cooperatively in teams. And when I think about ropes courses and things like that at your place, it seems to fit nicely into that expectation. So on that note, Alex Martins, among all of your offerings there, what would you say is the most popular among school-age children?
Certainly the Big Zip, and as Jeremy mentioned, at our Rochester location, the Golden Grizzly. Those two are really, really fun. They've got long, fast zip lines. They take you really high up into the trees without too much difficulty. You're not, you know, doing monkey bars in the trees like you would on some of our harder courses. But the thrill and the experience is really top-notch on those courses.
Yeah. So, Jeremy Fishman, from an academic perspective, how do your activities and offerings connect with what we would call the traditional school curricula, like math and science?
Sure. No, that's a great question. So, you know, when every climber that comes to our park with a school group goes through a safety orientation, or they learn how to use our equipment before they go to climb, and then they go through the practice lines thereafter before they're out on their own. And so there's really a variety of ways that you can point to building curriculum throughout this, whether it's in science to talk about the notion of gravity or the concept of gravity. There's so many different types of wildlife in the forest. You don't need to be an arborist to have a great time learning about the different trees. We have a variety of kinds at all of our parks that we can instruct both the instructors and the students on, which is really one of my favorite parts of the curriculum building aspect of things.
One last question, Alex Martins. I see that you have a no cell phone policy during climbing, and I'm curious how that is received by students, especially the older ones who may come on the field trip thinking they're going to take pictures and somehow document it for their social media.
Yeah. The nice thing is that when they are there as a group, for the majority of the time, most of the coordinators have already made it very clear that You don't have your cell phone up there. So as soon as they get there, the first thing they ask us is, where do we put our cell phone? Where can we, you know, put it safely? As we know, it's the most important thing to them. But I think one of the easiest things about it is that as soon as they get there, they get into their harness. We hand them the equipment. And their hands are full. They're busy. They're doing things. So they're not really thinking about their phone.
Yeah.
That being said, by the end of the, you know, their experience and that kind of thing, they're like, oh, can we take some pictures in the park? And of course they can. But our big focus is just making sure that when they're climbing, they're climbing. They're enjoying the time with their friends. They're not focused on, you know, social media.
Sure.
And I think the challenge is challenging enough. Trying to take a picture while you're doing some of the crazy stuff they do can be a little tricky. So
yeah, a time and place for everything. So from
exactly.
The Tree Runner Parks program, I'd like to thank Jeremy Fishman and Alex Martins for joining us today and really giving us a neat perspective on something that's really right in our backyard. I appreciate your time today, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Point Moran Real Point, Collins & Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Dr. Alicia Fly from the Macomb Intermediate School District. Welcome to the program, Alicia.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
I appreciate your time this morning, and we're talking about the Macomb Reads event that is coming up. Could you tell us a little bit about the purpose of this event and what are some of the goals of the event as well?
Sure. We're very excited and looking forward to this event. This is the sixth annual Macomb Reads event, and it's a countywide event, and the purpose is to raise awareness around literacy. It provides an opportunity to provide free books to students to help build their home library, and it's schools partnering. All of our schools districts in Macomb County are part of this partnership, but again, our major objective is to raise awareness around the importance of literacy.
So tell our School Talks listeners when the event is held and where they can find information about it.
Yes, the event is held at the Macomb Intermediate School District, and it will be held on Saturday, November 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Our kickoff is always exciting. That begins right at 10 a.m. And you can get more information about this event by going to www.misd.net/Macomb Reads.
So the target audience for an event like this includes students, teachers, families, and community members, correct?
Absolutely. More specifically, it's an event that's catered to preschool, pre-K through elementary age students and their families.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of our staff members who help to plan the event, but they also interact with the families, and certainly business and community members are a big part of the event as well.
So
it's a literacy celebration in Macomb County.
Very nice. And for those attending, what kinds of activities or programs are planned this year for the event?
We will have our kickoff event. Our county executive, Mark Hackle, kicks off the event. And this year, we always have authors and illustrators at the event. And this year, author Jonathan Rand, who is, you know, he's been around for a while, but kids and families absolutely love him. He's a favorite. And we also have illustrator Brittany Jackson, who will be sharing some of the books that she's illustrated and also demonstrating ways to illustrate and how she engages in her work with the students.
And if I remember correctly from when my children were young, Jonathan Rand is the author whose books are either often set in Michigan. Is that correct?
Absolutely. He's a well-known Michigan author, and he's known for the Michigan Chiller series.
Yes.
As his book. And, again, it's so exciting when he's here because not only are the students excited about him, but we also now have some of their parents who remember Jonathan Rand, and they get just as excited to engage with him as well at this event.
Absolutely. And, you know, literacy is such a big word, and I think many people might not understand what that means or all that it encompasses. And in an event like this, are there any interactive or hands-on type things that children are able to do at the event?
There are. Again, literacy, you strengthen your literacy skills by practicing. And so students have the opportunity to engage in reading as they get their books, and they're so excited. We will have storytellers. We have literacy ambassadors throughout the county that will engage students in storytelling. We have literacy bingo, where, again, students get to explore concepts of print, but also various literacy titles. And they're, as you mentioned, literacy is so big, and there are just so many different ways to engage with it. We will also have a puppet show. And again, all of the themes and all of the interaction will be about literacy, but just trying to engage students with a variety of modalities.
Yes, currently we're joined with by Dr. Alicia Fly from the Macomb Intermediate School District talking about their upcoming event, Macomb Reads. Dr. Fly, are there any specific resources or materials provided to teachers or parents who attend this event? Any kind of big takeaways for them?
Absolutely. Each child who attends will receive a bag filled with books. They will have books from our authors, so they'll have books from Jonathan Rand, as well as our illustrator, Brittany Jackson. There's a writing journal, so the students can engage in writing and drawing. And there are other items in the bag that, again, encourage and get students excited about reading. And we also post on our website ways that students and families can engage at home around literacy. And that's on the Macomb Intermediate School District website, MISD.net/Macomb Reads.
You know, going back to the literacy point for a moment, one of the things that is really prominent in education right now is the idea of how children are reading. And when you consider the number of sources that children, whether preschool all the way up through high school years, are reading and writing, historically we always look as literacy as reading books or novels or things. But in the current trends, there are a lot of ways kids are interacting with text, whether it's text messaging, watching things on their phone, all of which contribute to this sense of literacy. And by all accounts, as many things the Macomb Intermediate School District does, this looks to be a great event for kids. Dr. Alicia Fly from the Macomb Intermediate School District, I'd like to thank you for joining us on School Talks today. Best of luck at the event. One more time is Saturday, November 2nd, starting at 10 a.m. and running until 2 p.m. Thanks so much for joining us on School Talks.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I'd like to thank our guests, Claire Lanois Hall from the Detroit Zoo, Amy Green from the Belle Isle Nature Center, Jeremy Fishman and Alex Martins from Tree Runner Parks, and from the Macomb Intermediate School District, Dr. Alicia Fly. We'll leave it there until next week, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.